views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Welcome to Cultural Brilliance Radio, the DNA of organizational excellence with Claudette Rowley. Conversations that are transforming the world of culture and business. Claudette brings fresh, innovative perspectives that push the boundaries of what organizational cultures can and should be. Learn how to catalyze your organization's workforce into an authentic, intentional, and financially successful culture. Now here's your host, Claudette Rowley.
Hi, everybody. I'm Claudette Rowley, and you are listening to Cultural Brilliance, the DNA of Organizational Excellence on Transformation Talk Radio. Stay with us for the next hour, and let us help you experience some groundbreaking ways to transform your company's culture. Twice each month, we have some of the foremost experts on organizational culture, change, and leadership, helping you understand how to make a brilliant culture the rule rather than the exception. On our show, we are lucky to have the most amazing guests, and today is absolutely no exception. Our guest today is Howard Ross, who is the author of a newer book called Our Search for Belonging, How Our Need to Connect is Tearing Us Apart. Let me introduce Howard. He is a lifelong social justice advocate and the founding partner of an organization called Cook Ross. He is considered one of the world's seminal thought leaders on identifying and addressing unconscious bias. So I'm super interested to learn more about that. He has delivered programs in 47 states and over 40 other countries to audiences, including Fortune 500 companies, major institutions within healthcare, government, and nonprofit. He's also written a couple of other books. One was a Washington Post bestseller called Everyday Bias, Identifying and Navigating Unconscious Judgments in Our Daily Lives, and a second book called Reinventing Diversity, Transforming Organizational Community to Strengthen People, Purpose, and Performance. As I mentioned, his book, Our Search for Belonging, was published in May of 2018, and it describes how to bridge the divide in our increasingly polarized society. Welcome, Howard.
Thanks, Claudia. It's great to be with you.
Yeah, great to be with you. I've been looking forward to our discussion. Coincidentally, a colleague of mine gave me your book maybe 6 or 7 months ago. Someone reached out and asked if I'd be interested in having you on the show. And I said, absolutely.
So, thanks.
I had a preview.
Yeah, so, it's good. It's good that you felt that way after seeing the book. That's good.
Right, exactly. versus something else.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
I wanted to start when I was prepping for the show today. Something really struck me, which was a quote you use in the preface of the book, which I'd love to read so listeners can benefit from it also. Please. And it's by Maya Angelou. And the quote is this: "You are only free when you realize you belong no place. You belong every place, no place at all. The price is high. The reward is great." And I'd heard this quote once before, but I'd love to get your take on this. What does this mean to you?
Well, I think that at the end of the day, first of all, what the book talks about is this human need to belong, and that we really do. As social animals, we really are oriented towards fitting in with the groups around us. And everybody, listening, I'm sure, has had an experience in their life of feeling really included and like they really did belong to a group, whether if they're lucky, it was their family, or maybe it was a job or a team that they were a part of, or a book group that they were a part of for 20 years or something like that, where you felt like you were really fully included, excuse me, and fully belong. And then we've all probably also had experiences where we felt excluded. And we felt like we were on the outside. And what I read in Dr. Maya's quote is, and the reason I included it is because at the heart of it, we can only really feel like we fully belong anywhere when we belong to ourselves. And so when she says, when you belong nowhere and when you belong everywhere, no place and you belong every place, excuse me. I think that's what she's saying is that, you can really fully belong when you're fully in touch with yourself, when you belong to yourself. And there, in that case, you don't need any place at all. But at the same time, when you have that experience, you can really belong everywhere because you don't need things from that environment in order to feel satisfied. And at the same time as we want to get people to orient towards how do I get along better with others, we're also trying to get people to get a deeper understanding of themselves.
Absolutely. And I'm just, you know, even in your explanation there, it's clear to me how tied together those ideas are, right? That if we belong to ourselves, we can belong anywhere and we can have that deeper experience.
Claudette, I think this is a relatively universal experience. I think any of us have something, for example, in our life we feel insecure about. Maybe it's some aspect of our appearance or some aspect of our training or something like that. And we know that if anybody draws attention to those things, those are the things we have the greatest triggers about. Those are the things we're the most sensitive to. Because it touches into our own disowned self, a part of ourselves that we're not comfortable with. But on the other hand, when we feel really good about ourselves and really solid in ourselves, people can criticize us about that aspect. They can tease us about that aspect. It never really gets in very deeply because at the core, we feel pretty good about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we have this natural need for belonging. But how if we turn that, I know your book goes into this, into some sort of unhealthy extreme that we're experiencing?
Well, I think what happens is we all, as I said before, we all want to belong to groups and we naturally gravitate towards particular groups. And I think, and there's nothing wrong with that as long as it's healthy orientation. And that means usually that we're bonding with that group for the purpose of doing something. So a team comes together to win the Super Bowl, or a group comes together in a company to be successful, or you know, a study group comes together to be successful in their exam. All those are examples of bonding for positive purposes. But bonding can also happen in negative ways when people come together against another group. And this is what happens when we see, you know, the rise of nationalism or white supremacy or things like this, is that these groups are, what brings these groups together is the hatred of others or stopping others. What's happening in our society today, and of course the fact that the polarization is here is no surprise to anybody, is that we are becoming tribal like that. We've moved from what historically was a bell curve society, where from a political standpoint, most people were sort of in the middle areas, few people on the extreme, and it was very natural for us to come up with solutions to problems across those barriers. So famously, Teddy Kennedy and Orrin Hatch, the arguably the most liberal and most conservative members of the Senate, collaborating on education reform, or Joe Biden and John McCain collaborating on any number of things. That was sort of the natural way of doing things. But now what's happened is we move to a dumbbell curve where everybody's on the extremes and nobody's in the middle. And that causes this intense tribalism, and increasingly that's tribalism against the other as opposed to for any particular initiative that we have ourselves.
So what's caused this? What's caused this dumbbell curve?
Well, I think that there are a number of things. I think that one thing is changes in the media. That we used to get all of our information from the same media sources. We generally trusted those media sources to be accurate. We knew that they would make mistakes sometimes. But for example, during the days of Watergate, you know, the New York Times and the Washington Post were trustworthy to people. And we all watched ABC, NBC, and CBS, and it was pretty much homogenized news. You know, you didn't get very much of a difference, and you certainly didn't get a point of view, because first of all, it was considered to be unethical in those days for a newscaster to have a strong point of view. And secondly, just from a pure financial model, if you're a major network and you've got the entire audience is your market share, you can't do something that's going to alienate half your marketplace. And so you keep it basically neutral. Now what we have is this bifurcated system where we have cable news, where the cable news station doesn't really need the whole marketplace. If Fox or MSNBC only gets 20% of the market share, they can work with that. They can work with that from a standpoint of their financial market. And so as a result, they can basically keep that market share by throwing red beets to their base, whichever base it is. And this is what we see, is that the news gets increasingly polarized relative to its point of view. People tend to watch the news stations that they agree with. We multiply that by social media, where we unfriend people who disagree with us or block people on Twitter who disagree with us. If you listen to Breitbart or read Breitbart and I read the HuffPost, or you read the Wall Street Journal and I read the Washington Post, you know, all of these things add to this sense that we're actually encasing ourselves in bubbles of our own agreement. And pretty soon we're actually participating in our own propagandizing.
Thank you for explaining that so clearly, right? Because I think when you're consuming the media and you're in the midst of all this polarization, it's really hard to see. And I know that's part of the issue, right? It's hard to see clearly what's going on, right? We lose that global viewpoint that we used to get, it sounds like, from, you know, CBS and NBC. And I remember having four channels on my TV as a kid, you know?
Yes, exactly.
Very different, right? And the TV is black and white. Yeah.
Right. You probably remember Walter Cronkite came out and gave a relatively mild statement about his concern about the Vietnam War. It was seismic because we weren't used to newscasters doing that. In fact, Lyndon Johnson later said, when we lost Walter Cronkite, we lost the country in terms of the Vietnam War. But nowadays, of course, 80% of what we see on the news is punditry. We don't even watch the news anymore. We watch people watching the news. You know, we turn on into these panels, which are already analyzing it for us before we've actually seen the regular news story itself. And so this begins to build itself up. And of course, it's showing up in really sad ways. We know that thousands of families, for example, have canceled Thanksgiving dinner the last couple of years rather than be at the table with old Uncle Ernie, who voted differently from them. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's really gotten to the point where it's even tearing families apart.
Right. I know. Yeah. Our family has with my husband's family, just sort of a tacit agreement to not talk about politics at all. Right. Mm-hmm. So that doesn't happen. Because there are some pretty wide ranging viewpoints in the room, you know, so just turn into a big, you know, people's feelings would be really hurt. Right. And it would be a lot of conflict that wouldn't be productive in any way.
Yep, exactly.
So, you know, I know your book goes into this and it's an important question to ask, which is we're already seeing a lot of consequences, but if we continue down this path, what are you seeing is going to happen?
Well, I think it's, you know, I mean, sadly, I think it's not extreme to say that we're in the middle of a cold civil war right now. It fortunately hasn't gotten hot. I don't think that we're in any way immune to that happening, depending upon circumstances and the like. But what's happening is that this gets reinforced every day, day by day. I'm going to just give you an example. I was down in Texas working with a client, and I was exercising in the morning and happened to have CNN on, and I make a point of watching multiple news stations. This happened to be the day that Michael Cohen was going to testify in front of the Senate, or the House, I guess it was. And so CNN had the sort of before the show thing going on, you know, where they were talking about what was going to be happening. And I watched that for about a half an hour while I was exercising, and then got showered, dressed, got into my car. And when I got into the car, I decided to turn on, since I was in Dallas and I knew they were relatively easy to find in that part of the country, to find a conservative radio program to turn on to. And I turned on this conservative radio talk show, and I didn't even know who the guy was. I didn't get his name. He starts the show. It happened to be the top of the hour. He starts the show by saying, well, this, you know, used an expletive, liar is going to be testifying today. It's shameful, and that's as much attention as we're going to give it. And that was it. 45 seconds, maybe 1 minute was the entire coverage you got on that station. So somebody who watched CNN that morning was getting a completely different worldview than somebody who was listening to this guy on the radio. And I think this happens all the time now. And one of the things I recommend to people all the time is that we start watching different news stations so that at least we understand the information that our friends and neighbors and work, you know, people we work with and the like are getting, and we can have a better understanding of where they're coming from if they disagree with us.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. That's a great piece of advice. And we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to start talking more about what we can do about this situation, what we can do in our families, individually, at work, and any other place we're a part of. You are listening to Cultural Brilliance, the DNA of Organizational Excellence. I'm Claudette Rowley. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Are you ready to finally feel empowered and knowledgeable in your political stance? Let Marsha Padilla Goad educate you on exactly how important grassroots advocacy is in a relatable way to all parties and all perspectives. Tune in to Grassroots Advocacy Radio with Marsha every first Tuesday of the month at 12 p.m. Pacific and 3 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more, visit DynamicsInPublicAffairs.com.
Hi, I'm Laura Meeks, and the most common problem that my clients face is all work and no play. This is why I created Fly High Living. I help you develop a balanced life plan and guide you to a place where you love to wake up in the morning.
Call 888-666-1570 or go to flyhighliving.com to sign up for the 4-week Flight Plan for Life course.
To find answers to life's questions, you need to look within yourself. Dr. Glenna Rice brings your questionable conversations on Transformation Talk Radio each month. Tune in each month for insight into how you can live up to your full potential. Dr. Glenna is a physical therapist, certified Access Consciousness, and Access Body Class Facilitator. How does it get any better than this? For more information on Dr. Glenna Rice and her work, visit glennarice.com.
Tune in to The Jen Royster Show, intuitive guidance to inspire your life, each Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific and 11 a.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This amazing show is an inspirational hour that will take you on an epic metaphysical journey to discover the spiritual approach to life's greatest challenges. Dr. Jen is an internationally known intuitive counselor, spiritual teacher, and energy healer. Call in for intuitive readings and visit JenRoyster.com for more information.
Do you sometimes feel overwhelmed by your mind? Powerless when it seems to spin in worry circles or bombard you with self-critical thoughts? Do you want to learn how to master your mind and feel more in control of your life? Listen to Dr. Friedman's Empowerment Radio. Shift from confusion to clarity, self-doubt to confidence, and from anxiety to peace and balance. Dr. Friedman and his many guest experts share the insights and tools you want to live with greater ease, joy, and purpose. Tune in to Empowerment Radio every first and third Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time.
On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey, engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and Transformation Talk Radio.
We're back on Cultural Brilliance Radio. I'm Claudette Rowley. And if you're just joining us, my guest today is Howard Ross, who is the author of a book called Our Search for Belonging, How Our Need to Connect is Tearing Us Apart. So Howard, before the break, we were talking about, you know, the consequences, right, of this division, divisiveness that's moving through our country. And you were just giving some, you know, really interesting viewpoint about how watch multiple media sources, right? Like different outlets, really get a full picture of what's going on. And it made me think about my husband sometimes watches, he also tries to read different kinds of newspapers and watch different media shows, news shows, excuse me, for that reason. But there are certain shows, and I won't say which they are, but he'll watch and I'll say, why are you watching? And he said, for entertainment. And I think that's really sad, right? That a news show is entertainment now, right?
And, well, I think that this is one of the problems. I don't mean to interrupt you, Claudette, but I think before we leave that point, this is, I think, one of the problems we have. I think that the news has been taken over by entertainment, and it's hard to discern for most people what's supposed to be a news program and what's supposed to be just as what we used to call shock stuff. You know, I mean, if you turn on, whether you're looking at Sean Hannity or Rachel Maddow. And I'm not saying I necessarily think they're equivalent, but I always like to be sensitive to the fact that even though, because I tend to be more on the liberal side of the question, I might see Hannity as more toxic. People on the other side see her as more toxic. But the point is, I think we could all agree that this is pure opinion. There's no real news here. This is pure opinion about the news. And the problem is, as I said before, all too often, that's what's available to us these days. There's very little pure news. And people say this to me all the time. Well, you know, why can't we just get the news, just the straight news? And I say, you can. You could watch the PBS NewsHour, but nobody does, or almost nobody does. And this is the problem. It's like we are consumers who are being sold exactly what we buy in the news, and yet we act like we're victims of what they're giving us rather than taking responsibility for asking what we need. Asking for what we need.
Yeah, that's such an interesting point. So an important one. So how would we take responsibility for that?
Well, I think one of the things is to start as consumers, to start making it clear to the news sources that we're that we're oriented towards, that we're not going to continue to be their customers, because that's really what we are to them. We're not going to continue to be their customers unless they do a better job. So, you know, it's easy enough for somebody to say, I'm going to watch PBS NewsHour, or I'm going to get my news from sources that are less biased, less so obviously biased. And to tell, you know, whoever you think is too biased in the news, you know, I really like you to do a clear job of delineating between when you're providing absolute news and when you're providing opinion. And I'd like to see a lot more of the latter and or the former and less of the latter. And I think that when we start doing that, then we'll start getting what we're looking for. But the problem is, as I said before, most of us go along with what's offered and then complain about it rather than understanding that we have some power in the marketplace to change that.
We have tremendous power in the marketplace, don't we?
Absolutely. Look, the news, more than ever, the news is a financial equation. The people who are running news stations are looking for getting more people to watch their stations so that they can get more advertising dollars, so that they can make money. And there's nothing wrong with that. I have no problem, you know, with the nature of capitalism operating in that way. I do think that it's dangerous that those are the only sources we have, because then, you know, because then we see what we're seeing here. But I think the issue is we have to be more thoughtful and more conscious about what we're exposing ourselves to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I think, you know, it's my area of study and work is organizational culture. So of course I'm, you know, in my mind, I'm already thinking about organizations, right?
Yes.
And what we just talked about the media and the news and the divisiveness, how is that impacting companies today? What are you seeing?
Well, that's important, because I also have my background is in organizational development, and I've done that work for 35 years in organizations, helping organizations develop their cultures. And I think one of the things that we're seeing now is when people come to work, they don't only bring their backpack and their laptop and their thermos and their lunch, they also bring their values and their reactions and what they saw on the news that morning. And this is coming to work with us. And I'm sure that most people who are listening to us have had an experience where either they themselves or somebody they work with has had some tension with somebody else who they work with, who comes from a different side of the political equation. And, you know, there's some places I've seen where this was extremely dramatic and a lot of, you know, creating a lot of tension. Some places where it's much more subtle and it's just under the surface, but it still affects the nature of relationships with people. And when we're in this polarized environment, this happens much more easily, because if we go back to what I said earlier about that bell curve society, when we were in that bell curve society, mostly our conversations occurred on an issue by issue basis. In other words, I might agree with you on gun rights, but disagree with you on civil rights, but agree with you on foreign policy and disagree with you on economic policy, for example. But now, as we move into this dumbbell curve society, it's become more identity based. So it's now you're one of those kind of people. It's not just I disagree with you about something. You're now a completely different tribe of people than I am. And that means that you have completely different orientation, and I have less of a motivation for having a relationship with you. I could tell you, you know, for the book, because I mostly come from the more liberal side of this conversation, I went out intentionally, interviewed over 100 people who voted for President Trump, because I really wanted to understand kind of where they were coming from. And it's been shocking. First of all, it was a terrific experience for me, because it broke up all of my stereotypes. And I realized that there are all kinds of different people who voted on that side of the equation. But in addition to that, what was really disheartening to me was how many people on my side of the political equation said to me, I can't believe you're wasting your time talking to these people, or something to that effect. And you know, I've always believed that we've got to talk to each other, because it's the only way we resolve things. But I think we've gotten exactly to that point. So all of that comes to work with us. And then we have this determination, do we talk about it at work, knowing that it could open Pandora's box, or do we not talk about it, knowing that it's there grinding under the surface?
And it's, yeah, I think that's a great point. And it's, you know, I was struck by your comment when you went and interviewed the 100 people who voted for Trump. And some of the folks, you know, said, hey, why are you wasting your time with those people? And is they're less than or whatever, right? Not worth speaking with. And it reminds me of, you know, stories I've been a part of or heard of, you know, even with social issues that have been really divisive, right? Like the abortion issue and things like that. And then when people started to actually talk human to human, things changed, right?
Absolutely.
And is that similar to your experience of talking with 100 people who voted for President Trump?
Well, absolutely. We know. Well, first of all, we know that there's some science behind this. We know that psychologists have studied and found that if you take an issue and you have two groups of people who disagree about that issue, and you put them in the same room and you tell them, see if you can work this out, they will move towards moderation. Both sides mm-hmm. will tend to move towards moderation. If you take that same issue, you take the same groups and say, you go in this room and see if you come up with a solution, you go in that room and come up with a solution, they'll move towards the extremes. And this is one of the reasons why it's so important that we stay engaged with each other. Because the more we see ourselves as only wanting to relate to people like us, the more extreme our points of view will naturally become. The more extreme they become, obviously, the harder it is to bridge with each other and find solutions that work for everybody. You know, my experience is, even as somebody who is, you know, has decidedly strong political points of view, I really value the fact that there's another perspective on the other side. You know, we might say that if we think of the great American code of liberty and justice for all, that conservatives focus mostly on liberty and liberals focus mostly on justice. But either one of them without the other can be problematic. Liberty without justice creates huge disparities and usurlessness in society. Justice without any checks on it can be too much interference in people's lives by government or some governing body. And so it's when we get both together and combine our thinking, we come up with our best solutions.
Yeah, we really do. And I was a couple of weeks ago on a family vacation, went to Mount Vernon, you know, Washington, D.C. And I had never been there, but I was really struck by, you know, what I learned and what and how much more I learned about George Washington and his thought process and his struggles and, the you know, and how nuanced and sophisticated the thinking was around developing our country, you know, and this liberty and justice piece you just mentioned made me think of it, right? That they just didn't say, let's do it this way. They thought through everything they could possibly think of and wrote it up. And it's like, I thought, wow, we need to bring more of that nuance back, right? More of that discernment back into our conversations.
Absolutely. I mean, that's exactly what we have to do. And we have to start realizing that it is possible to agree, to disagree without being disagreeable. Without being trite, that's true. And we can actually find ways to do that. And I've developed some amazing relationships because I've been consciously going on into social media and trying to interact with people in more civil ways. And this one gentleman, for example, his name's Paul. And Paul lives in Jacksonville, Florida. And by the way, he's given me permission to talk about this. Our relationship started about 2.5 or 3 years ago when he trolled me with a tweet. I tweeted something and he said something like, you liberals, da-da-da-da-da. It wasn't caustic or anything, but it was sort of, and I said to him, I responded by saying, I'd be glad to have a civil conversation with you about this, if you like. And we've now been engaged in 2.5 years of dialogue with each other. And we debate fiercely. We challenge each other's ideas, never personally though. We never insult each other. And we've developed a friendship. We talk on the phone every now and again. He's invited me to come visit him and I've done the same. And if we're ever in our parts of the country, we will do that. I've come to really appreciate him and know that he's an honorable man and a good man, and he just happens to disagree with me. And just recently, when the government shutdown was happening, we were debating that, and somebody from his side of the Twitter feed jumped in and basically cussed me out and said, you know, you effing liberals, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And Paul jumped in on the tweet and said, do not dare talk to my friend that way. He and I disagree, but he's an honorable man, and I expect you to treat him so, or I'll block you from my tweet. I was almost moved to tears. You know, I mean, this is, you know, it's like that old saying. I think it may have been Edmund Burke who originally said that, you know, I don't agree with anything you're saying, but I'll fight to the death for your right to say it. And I think that we've got to get back to appreciating the importance of free speech and sharing of ideas and listening to each other.
Yeah, we absolutely do. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to talk more about this. And we're also going to get into a conversation about what certain companies are doing to bridge the divides. This is Cultural Brilliance. I'm Claudette Rowley. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Our Are you ready to branch out? Take a leap of faith. Then tune in to Get Rooted Radio with Erica Gifford Mills on TransformationTalkRadio.com every second and fourth Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific to equip, empower, and enlighten yourself. Erica will energize and excite you to power up your passionate dream that sets your soul on fire. So, get fearlessly ready and get powerfully rooted in your yes to live it up, love it up, and let it go. Visit GetRootedRadio.com.
Golden Otter Divinations Radio, where the metaphysical meets the mainstream with Autumn Seibel. Tune in the first Friday every month at 9 a.m. Pacific as Autumn, educator, health coach, and medium, explores metaphysical and mainstream strategies on how to elevate your level of conscious living. Draw in the abundance that is yours by divine right. For more information about working with Autumn, visit goldenotter.us. That's golden like the precious metal and otter like the precious animal.us.
Choose the New Earth on the Cornelia Stephanie Show. Tune in each week on Transformation Talk Radio as Cornelia takes listeners on an odyssey of higher consciousness to inspire, educate, and empower. Cornelia guides people on the path of self-healing, peace, and liberation. The Cornelia Stephanie Show is your catalyst for anchoring heaven on earth on a global scale. For more information, go to CorneliaStephanie.com.
Your buzz for life buzzed off? Feeling ignored, invisible, and wondering if this is really all there is? The years go by faster as we gain momentum. You're halfway there. Are you gathering speed or puttering out? Hit your stride for the liberating half of life. Comfortable in your skin? You can do better than that. Tune in to Discovering You Again Radio every fourth Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific as host Susan Axelrod encourages listeners to decide what they want, get inspired to action, and face challenges head on. Host Susan Axelrod pulls no punches, encouraging you to grab the brass ring and soar. For more information about Susan, go to www.whatwillyourlegacybe.com.
High-frequency healing for an amazing life with Source Light Radio. Join host Laura Barton each month on Transformation Talk Radio as she explores Source Light integration, a unique spectrum of energy, light, and frequency. Experience instantaneous healing and amazing shifts in consciousness with Source Light Integrations Radio. For more information on Laura and her work, visit SourceLightIntegrations.com.
Cultural Brilliance Radio. I'm Claudette Rowley, here with my guest today, Howard Ross, who is the author of Our Search for Belonging. Howard, before we jump back into our conversation, for listeners who want to find out more about you and your book, what is the best way for them to do that?
Probably the best is to go to www.howardjross.com and they can get the contact information there. The book is available in all major booksellers. It's available and in all major forms. It's available in audio as well. So they can find that at Amazon or in the other bookseller.
Excellent. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So we were talking about your friend Paul, right?
Yes.
And what I loved in that, and thank you for sharing that story. What I loved in it was too that this the humanity that becomes available just by knowing someone, right? It changes everything.
You know, it's so true, and we've seen this happen so often throughout the course of history that you know, when extraordinary people reach out to each other, whether it was Begin and Sadat or Nelson Mandela and Leclerc, or you know, when people who even people who've had generations of conflict have found that there's something really valuable in going out and talking to each other and finding ways to see if there's solution. And, you know, I think Mandela said, and I'm paraphrasing because I don't remember the word for word quote, but he said something like, when you stop treating your enemy like your enemy and start treating him with respect, you become partners instead of enemies. And I think that that's true in a lot of cases. Now, I'm not suggesting we can reach everybody. I don't expect that I'll ever reach Richard Spencer or David Duke or any of these hate-filled white supremacists, you know. But those people really only have a platform because people are being moved to the extremes by not having any reasonable conversations to have. And I think the more we can bring reasonable conversations to every part of our life, the more we can create a breakthrough in that way, which is a great transition to the conversation about what some people are doing in business.
It is. Yes. Thank you for that. You know, I'd love to hear your stories about Target and Kaiser Permanente. It sounds like they're doing some really, really innovative, interesting things.
Yeah, well, Kaiser's a great place to start because George Halverson, who is the CEO for Kaiser from 2002 to 2014, came into an organization that was a good organization. It wasn't like it was in tatters or anything, but by the time he left, they were considered to be the very best organization of their kind, probably in the world. And so I talked to George extensively about what he had done there, and it was all very much along the lines of what we're talking about, and that is creating a sense of belonging. You know, George created his own kind of Maslow's hierarchy, if you will, of the things that were important. And one of the things he found was really important was direction. And that is that organizations create a clear sense of what they stand for, whether it's leader-driven. And, you know, Apple, for example, would be a great example of a leader-driven culture like that, where Steve Jobs was the point man. And it was like, follow Steve and that'll happen. Or whether it's more mission-driven, like, say, Hewlett-Packard, where the HP way is the guiding principle because, you know, David Packard is long gone, but it was built into the culture of the organization. But one way or another, we have to have that sense of direction that clearly tells us this is what things are about. The second thing George found that was important was that there's some collective gain that is clear to everybody, that everybody in the organization wins when the organization wins. And this, of course, is not always true in organizations where you have, you know, senior leaders who make ridiculous amounts of money and are only looking at the bottom line. They're not looking at the benefit of the organization as a whole and the people in the organization. There's a wonderful organization that's developed over the last 5 or 10 years called the Conscious Capitalism Institute, which is looking at really emphasizing companies who are looking not only at a single bottom line, but are triple or quadruple bottom line. They're looking at the you know, obviously the financial returns is one, but also employee satisfaction is another one. Customer satisfaction is another one. Sometimes sustainability and community contribution is another one. And so when we begin to look holistically, we find that works as well. Then the third one that George focused on was that there was a sense of us in the organization. He really consciously went about taking apart the us versus them nature of the organization, even to the point where if somebody would say something like, you know, those people in the mailroom, he would correct them and say, you mean our people in the mailroom, so that people remembered that they were all connected. And this became almost like a religion in the organization for the people. The fourth is the focus on the team and not just individual performance. And this is something we've known for years. It goes back to Edward Deming and the great work he did with quality, that when you focus on individuals, then you get individual performance. But when you focus on and reward team behavior, then you get people pulling together and working together more. And the fifth component is some part of that, which is understanding who the common enemy is. The common enemy sounds a little bit intense, obviously, but what he means is, you know, who's our competition? What are our threats in the marketplace? Are we all focused on those and aware of those? Which leads to the last one, which is understanding the real danger of not being successful. So George worked those principles and ended up taking Kaiser to the top of their market share. Now, at a different level, there are some people who are really more specifically working on some of the societal discord. Caroline Wanga at Target, for example, who's their chief diversity officer, and James Momon at General Mills have been conducting courageous conversation sessions. You know, in one that I did with General Mills not long ago, we had 600 people in the room sitting at circular small tables. You know, so everybody had maybe 8 or 10 people at a table. Each table had a facilitator who was trained to facilitate conversations. I did an initial presentation, just give people sort of some parameters to work with and to understand some of the dynamics that are going on. And then they had a chance for an hour and 15 minutes or an hour and a half to talk about some really challenging issues, but to talk about them inside of a context where the conversation was being managed in a way that had people feel safe enough to really engage with each other. And so, you know, these kinds of structures really allow people not only to learn how to talk about some of these important social issues that are going on, But of course, learning that same ability to talk about some of these different issues comes right into the workplace. So then when I have a workplace issue that's difficult, I can use those same skills to talk about that as well.
Yeah, thank you for those great examples. And I think it's one thing that's striking me, you know, the General Mills session you just mentioned that you did recently. So what were some of the questions, if you remember, that or topics that got discussed during that session?
Really just about anything you could imagine. There were some people who chose to talk about things that were really tricky, like abortion or foreign policy, or some people talked about the political structure. You know, other people were talking about things that we might think as a little less mundane, less challenging, but still important for people, like, you know, work styles and how do we work with work styles, or how do we deal with some of the challenges of being working parents? I mean, we could talk about almost anything once we get the context for how to talk about them. And once we realize that disagreeing is not the end of the world. Now, there are limits to this. There's no question that there are some limitations to this. You know, James Baldwin once said that I'm willing to disagree with you about anything as long as it still recognizes my humanity. And said another way, I heard somebody say recently, there are no both sides when one side is genocide. So there are limitations to this. And I don't want people to hear this like I'm some Pollyanna who's saying, oh, we can talk about anything. Obviously, to certain extremes, we can. But those are really the extremes. Most people, in my experience, really desperately want to reopen these communication lines. And they feel the tension between themselves, sometimes in their siblings or their parents or the like, even. And they want to be able to learn to talk about these in a more constructive way.
Yeah, absolutely. So when organizations are like General Mills and Kaiser Permanente and Target and other companies, I'm sure, they're providing this kind of training. They're helping people engage in this kind of dialogue. How is that impacting the workplace? I mean, you mentioned, yeah, people can have better conversations about tough topics, but I'm curious if they've seen other really positive outcomes.
Oh, I think that when you think about it, any one of us who comes to work every day and feels like they have to protect a part of ourselves knows that we don't work as well as when we're really just able to be ourselves fully. And so I think that the first and maybe the most important thing it does is it breeds authenticity. It encourages people to be their authentic self at work. If I could talk to you about a really intense political difference and have that conversation in a constructive way, I'm also more likely to be able to talk with you about my thoughts about a particular project that we're doing or how our marketing plan might be done differently or things like that as well. Because the same part of me that feels comfortable with you and safe with you enough to be myself in one domain is going to feel that way in another domain. Now, nothing's perfect. And I'm not, you know, like I said, I'm not some Pollyanna about this. I'm not saying that you know, sugar and light and unicorns are going to fly or something. But we can incrementally learn to be less afraid of these conversations and more able to have really authentic conversations with each other. And when you do that, the whole company benefits because you get people's ideas. I mean, it's not a stretch for people to think about the fact that if I'm with a group of people and I'm not sure whether I'm fully accepted here and I'm not sure whether I really belong fully, am I going to be more or less likely to put out that idea that's maybe a little bit of a stretch, that's a little bit different, and see how people feel about it. Don't, you know, obviously, if I feel more comfortable with people, I'm more likely to do that. And if not, that idea, which may end up being our next big profit line, may never get out on the table.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I talk a lot in my work about psychological safety, which is the same thing you're saying,
yes.
Right? If we feel safe, right, emotionally safe, to take a risk, to speak up, right? And if you've talked about a tough political difference or a set of beliefs, it's much easier to talk about the everyday things that happen in most workplaces. I've been doing a project with a manufacturing company, and what you were saying made me think of this. One of the things that we started there was that every team at the end of the week, production team would have we call a weekly review conversation. And it's simply, you know, how did the week, what went well, what didn't go well, what did we learn, what are we doing differently? Very simple platform. But what one of the leaders said, he said, you know, now that we do that every week and we've gotten used to having that conversation, it's really easy for us to talk things through the rest of the week and give each other feedback in the moment. You know, so same idea, when people get used to talking and write in more structured ways and they get through some tough things, it opens the door for things to be much, I think, more streamlined at work, right? Just have a conversation, put things through and move forward. Yeah.
It's also a hell of a lot more efficient than having to do what we do sometimes, the machinations we go through to avoid telling the truth. We sometimes will, you know, we'll create these spaghetti kind of strand kinds of relationships with people because we're just afraid to have a straight conversation with them.
Yeah. We'll go to break in just a second, but one of the things I often, organizations will say to me, well, you know, we're having this problem with so-and-so and this came up and that came up and what do you think we should do? And I'll say, well, how did it go when you spoke with them about it? Oh, well, we didn't do that. You know, just we didn't sit down and have a conversation, right? And find out what was going on. Yeah, we get, like you said, the spaghetti workaround.
We're going to take a quick break.
You're listening to Cultural Brilliance Radio. My guest is Howard Ross. And when we come back, we're going to talk about some ideas and next steps. How can you put the things you've learned today on the show into action? Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Tune in to Lucid Planet Radio with Dr. Kelly Neff. This hit show will illuminate your senses and empower you beyond your daily stressors and hardships. Renowned psychologist and author Dr. Kelly will captivate you with far-reaching topics and amazing guests as you wake to the greatest version of yourself. Learn to tap into your intuitions, think critically about our world, heal emotional and psychological wounds, and follow your passions to live your dreams. The Lucid Planet. Welcome home. Visit lucidplanetradio.com for more information.
What is holding you back from living the life you are meant to live? Why is it vital to believe in something bigger than yourself? Are you in physical or emotional pain? Tune in monthly to Vibrant Purposeful Living. Awaken the vibrant life within you with Lou Paradise and Dr. Pat on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Lou's passion is to help everyone experience positive solutions for life. Find out more about Lou with Vibrant Purposeful Living at LouParadise.com.
This is Debbie Pokornik with a moment for standing in your power. Self-control begins with noticing how different feelings present themselves in your body. When you're feeling sensitive, for example, your chin might quiver, tears might well up in your eyes, and your voice might catch in your throat. Anger, on the other hand, might appear as tension in your jaw, back, or arms, along with clenched fists, heat in the upper torso, scowling, and a strong desire to yell. The more aware you become of your body cues, the easier it will be to recognize when you're on the road to disaster. Choose the emotions that cause you problems, then start noticing and logging the body cues that come with them.
For information and to work with Debbie, visit empoweringnrg.com. That's empoweringnrg.com.
Did you know that all of the shows on the Transformation Radio Network are available as podcasts to stream or download?
Really?
Check us out. Go to transformationradio.fm. We have business shows, spiritual shows, energy healing shows, and pretty much everything in between. Something for everyone guaranteed to inspire, educate, and transform. We are transforming the world, one listener at a time.
Being human has its challenges. Our physical health falters, our spirits sag, our dreams don't immediately come to fruition. Welcome to the power of Maximum Medicine Radio. Join me, Doc Martin, in conversations that will blow your mind about healing. In our hit show, Doc Martin addresses the scientific with bridging to the mystical approaches to give you a new narrative about maximum medicine. In this live
We're back on Cultural Brilliance Radio. I'm Claudette Rowley. And Howard, we were just saying that this is a great place, right, in our conversation to talk about next steps, right? How can people put into practice? Yeah. And I know in your book you have the 8 pathways for building belonging. What are those pathways?
Well, what we did is we studied both personal relationships and organizations where people were able seemingly to create this greater sense of belonging and engagement. And what we found was that there were some relatively consistent patterns, a number of which, you know, Halvorsen talked about when I was talking about Kaiser a minute ago, but they're worth repeating. The first is that we have a clear sense of vision and purpose. And this may seem obvious, but it actually, in most cases, is not at all obvious. People are not really clear what we're trying to create, especially in terms of the culture of an organization. I mean, you know, Claudette, you work with organizational culture, and we know that every organization has a culture that's perfectly designed to produce the results it's producing. However, mostly it's unconscious. So when we make that more conscious and we have a clear vision for what we're trying to create with the culture, then people have a direction to work towards. The second is to create a clear container to work in. And that means the agreements that we have about how we're functioning with each other, how we deal with different circumstances, the rules, as it were, of engagement in our culture. Excuse me. And what I like to say to people is, if you've got a small child or a dog and you want to put them out in your backyard, for example, and the fence is broken in places, you have to watch them every minute of the day, because otherwise they're going to sneak out one of those holes and go out to the street. But if you know your fence is secure, if you know that you've got a clear container, you can glance out every now and again and see them playing and see your kid playing in the sandbox and not worry about them, because you know they can only get into so much trouble. And so I think clear boundaries are really important. The third pathway we just talked about is opening people up to being authentic with each other, to being vulnerable with each other, to making connections with each other. And all too often in organizations, the real F word is feeling. But we know that human beings actually are more oriented by what we feel than any other aspect of our mental activity. And we can watch this now in the brain. The brain research shows that the limbic system, the feeling part of the brain, fires off before anything else does. We think we're rational, but we're actually rationalizing. So the more we can share that, the more we can be vulnerable about where we're coming from, the more we're going to understand each other. Pathway four is being more inclusive, getting more people enrolled in the conversation. And that means opening up to people of broad levels of diversity of identity, diversity of thought and ideas, making sure that we not only have representation, but that we also have full inclusion. I like to say that people say to me all the time, well, how does belonging fit into the diversity and inclusion equation? And I like to say that my dear friend and mentor, Dr. Jeanetta Cole, has said for years that diversity is being invited to the party and inclusion is actually being allowed to dance. I like to say that belonging is when you actually get to choose some of the music. You actually get to have input into the way the culture is actually designed. And then the fifth one is we want to actually cultivate open-minded thinking. And that means actually consciously trying to put yourselves into another person's shoes, not just giving tacit, you know, lip service to it, but actually consciously trying to see how other people are thinking and feeling. And in order to do that, we move to pathway six, to develop structures and forms of communication that we can all rely on. So that we know, for example, if we've got a challenge in front of us, that, okay, let's start using this method that we've been taught. This is one of the things we found in the Courageous Conversations work that we've done with Target and GM and other places, that they now have a tool that they can use. Seven is honoring the narrative and to recognize that there's always a story going on in the other side that has this make sense to them. As I heard somebody say one time, every villain is a hero in their own story. And if we can understand their story, we can often understand far more why they're doing the things they want and find better ways to compromise. And then the last is to develop some specific tools for negotiating when conflict comes up or mediating, so that we can find ways to resolve problems when they come up in healthy and constructive ways.
Thanks so much for sharing that. That's great. And it was interesting when I had read the eight pathways, I was thinking, oh, wow, that's, you know, it's so similar to the way I and I met, probably you also approach culture change work too, right?
Yes.
It's all one and the same, really, right? It's very similar. Just I was reading it. Oh, yeah, that's familiar. That looks familiar. So it seems like it's a pathway for change, all kinds of change, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It just makes sense. And I think that, I think an important thing for people to realize is that we're not talking about creating some new phenomenon. We're talking about building culture and community, which is something that human beings have struggled with and have found often good ways to do and not so good ways to do throughout our entire, you know, what we need to do is we need to apply that kind of thinking and rigorous design thinking and organizational thinking to some of these issues. We get stuck in thinking that we're dealing with things that are completely unique. And of course, you know, the situation we're in is different than any we've had before. There's no question about it, but there are similarities there as well. And it starts with mutual respect and really trying to understand each other. And in that vein, there's one tool that I'd love to leave people, something that they can do with anybody in their lives. And it's called taking the other to lunch. And this is actually adapted from a woman named Elizabeth Lesser, who was one of the co-founders of the Omega Institute in Rhinebeck, New York. And it starts basically by finding somebody who you know you have a difference with. It's usually somebody who you have some kind of a background relationship with, but it doesn't have to be. And you start by agreeing that the purpose of our conversation is not to convince each other or talk each other down, but it's to understand each other. That's the sole purpose of this conversation, to listen and to understand. And then you start and you set it up so you have four questions you ask, and each person should get roughly the same amount of time to answer each question, because that avoids having anybody dominate the other verbally. And so let's say 10 minutes or 15 minutes, however much time you have. And the first question is, what was the story of your life that led you to get to the belief system that you have now about this issue? In other words, what kinds of things happened to you in the background? So I give you an example. I did a mediation like this between a gay guy and a straight guy who had a conflict to come up because the straight guy had said in a public session that in his church, they believed that homosexuality was a sin. And it offended the other guy who left, caused a big furor in this group. And so I sat with the two of them. And so they each told their story. The gay guy told his story first about his background. It was not an unusual one. He came out as a teen, pretty supported by his family, was with a partner for 17 years, raising children, and just talked about how all of that affected his point of view and his view of the world. The other guy shared that he had grown up in a low-income, very dangerous neighborhood, and that five of his friends had been killed through gang violence when he was growing up. And the one thing that saved him was the church. And he didn't question his pastor. And immediately, the other guy could see, even though he didn't agree with the point of view the guy had, he could see where that life story could have led him there as well. You know, that if this was the thing that was tied to his survival, that he would hold on to it very tightly. Then the second question is, what are you afraid of about the other point of view? And this is important because if we get people to talk about their fears, we often get to the root of the strong feelings that they have. For most of us, fear is the core of most of our very strong points of view, protecting ourselves. So they talked about why they were afraid of each other's point of view. Then question number three is, what have you always wanted to ask somebody from the other group that you never have had the opportunity to ask? And this was the magic moment, if you will, in this particular conversation I'm talking about, when the straight guy said to the gay guy, when did you decide you were gay? And the other guy looks back at him and says, I'm not sure, when did you decide you were straight? And for the first time, the straight guy got the difference between sexual preference and sexual orientation. And he really got it. He said, well, I never did. And then the gay guy said, yeah, neither did I. And then the last question, which is really important, and this is the thing I've added to Elizabeth's model, is there anything you need to say to complete the past so you can move forward into a new future? Because often what happens when we have a change of mind, we just sort of sleaze our way out of it because we're embarrassed by previous things that we've done that have been contrary. But in this gives you a chance to really complete that. So in this case, the straight guy, for example, said to the gay guy, he said, look, I want you to know that there have been times in the past when I've sat around people and even participated in telling jokes about people like you. And I realize now how offensive that is. And I want you to know that I apologize to you for doing that in the past. And I give you my word, I will never do it in the future. And it was like a whole new future was created. And the other guy said similar things about stereotyping people who took positions that didn't agree with him. And then two of them then left, went back to the group of 60 leaders who they were in when the initial thing happened, and sat side by side and facilitated a conversation with the whole group. So, I mean, I think these things are possible. Yeah. We can do that with anybody in our lives.
Well, I want to thank you, Howard, so much for being on the show today and sharing your wisdom and expertise. Really, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I've really thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah, I did as well. And I'm sure listeners did too. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in as always to Cultural Brilliance Radio. Please join us the second and fourth Fridays of each month at 1 p.m. Eastern and 10 a.m. Pacific. We'll be back here in a couple of weeks. See you then.
You've been listening to the hit show Cultural Brilliance Radio, the DNA of organizational excellence with Claudette Rowley. Conversations that are transforming the world of culture and business. You can download this podcast and find out more about Claudette and her breakthrough work at ClaudetteRowley.com. Please contact Claudette
and find out how you can create a brilliant culture.